Accession number 18003, reel 3.
Ron Yetman, reel 3.
We moved on to the Yellow River, and there we stayed for 2 or 3 days. And this was probably late November, early December. And then the Chinese started. We were supposed to have been relieved there for a rest, to go to a rest area. But one morning we woke up, and there, out in the distance, was hundreds of Chinese just coming into the war. This is the... things started panicking. The Americans were overrun. They turned around and came back. Withdrew is a polite word for it. And we were left holding the fort for a time being. Then we were leapfrogged back through the Middlesex, and they held the line. Then we dug in and let the Middlesex and the Aussies back through, until we got backpedaled all the way to a place called Pak Chon. And there we were told that to dig in, and we had to hold the line, whatever. There we had to cross a river. I forget the name of the river. And unfortunately, the bridge was damaged. So it was a climbing job rather than a straightforward. You could walk most of the bridge, but you had to climb down the girder work where the bridge had been blown, down to river level. And an American artillery unit in that area had been cut off by the Chinese and North Koreans, and there was no way through for us. So this is where Major Gordon Ingram got shot. Another couple of lads in one of the other platoons got wounded. Our platoon was okay.
Did you see what happened when those casualties were taken?
The lads just picked them up and carried them with them.
No, I mean when they got shot, did you see how it happened?
Oh, well, the North Koreans had been attacking this the American artillery unit. They'd infiltrated right through the whole position and taken them from the rear. And we were sent back across the river to, apart from being on the move back, we was sent to clear these North Koreans away from the Americans. Gordon Ingram got shot as he was climbing down the bridge by a sniper, and as I say, a couple of other casualties were taken. And then I think it was 6th platoon. I won't be certain. It couldn't be certain which platoon was on which side of you. Anyway, the lads just picked them up and carted them off and handed them over to the medics, and they whipped them off. We eventually went through the American artillery unit and cleared the North Koreans, and allowed the American artillery unit to pack up and move back. This is the area we were told to stand and hold at all costs. We had to go back across the bridge again, which was another climbing job, but nothing untoward happened. We moved on a little bit away from the bridge and away from the river, hoping that the river would hold the Chinese up. This was a place which was, I think, was my worst time in Korea. It was cold. It was long evenings, long dark nights. This was winter, just beginning to get serious then. And we were there for 3 or 4 days, and nothing untoward's happening. Then one morning early, just after first light, all the bushes across the valley on the hill opposite began moving. I certainly couldn't believe my eyes, and I didn't believe it. Company commander, well, by this time, after Gordon, Major Gordon Ingram had been wounded. Major Penman had been wounded a second time. That was unfortunate. He'd been wounded by one of our own men. We dug in there at night, and we'd had orders that anything that moved, it didn't matter what it was, shoot first and ask questions afterwards. Unfortunately, Major Penman decided to go for a walk in just to see how the lads were getting on, to try and encourage them. Someone saw him moving and opened fire, and we never saw him again. He was sent home to UK badly wounded. It was a pure accident. It's a pity to say it was his own fault, because he was a man that gave the orders to shoot on sight, because Major Ingram had been wounded earlier, and Major Penman had resumed command of the company again. It seems a pity, because he was a good officer. And so Captain Mitchell took over the company then. And we saw these bushes moving, and just couldn't believe it. It was unbelievable. And because it was reported back, company commander came up and had a look, said a few choice words, and Christ, so they are. Informed the powers that be through the CO, the brigade, and we were told to pull out then. There were hordes of them, hundreds of thousands, I say hundreds of thousands. In that position alone, I suppose there was 2, maybe 3,000 Chinese on the opposite side of the valley, and here was, what, 3 companies of Argyles, probably totalling about less than 150 men, because all the companies had been depleted. We'd had no replacements for the people that had been wounded over the previous couple of 3 months. And eventually we were given the order to move again, so we pulled back farther. This is when the weather, and it was really bad. We were in the hills. We'd probably done 50 miles. We were doing 20, 25 miles at a stretch. And it was slow moving. It was agony. By this time, my feet personally were blistered again and bleeding. Boots had been worn out again. Blood was coming through the boot holes, the bootlace holes. I wasn't the only one. Until we got back, again, this is all in the Pak Chon area, and we came to this ridge, and there we dug in. We used pickaxes to break through the permaice or permafrost, because the ground was really frozen to about 18 inches deep. You just couldn't dig in normally like you did. It was hard graft. It was worse than... Everybody was tired, bad-tempered, shouting and bawling at one another, arguing with one another. Do it off, sod this, I'm not going to do that, and so on and so forth. Anyway, company commander came round and gave us a bit of encouragement. Eventually we dug in, and once we got past the frost, it wasn't too bad digging, and we gradually deepened the trenches, and we were told that this time we stayed there come what may. We couldn't go any farther back. We eventually called the place Frostbite Ridge because it really was cold, really cold. It must have been 20 degrees below most nights. We used to stand in the trench, banging our feet, letting everybody know where we were. We dragged our blankets across the top of the trench and held them down with lumps of rock or whatever we could find to stop them from blowing away and stop the wind from blowing down the trench, and just our heads just exposed, blankets wrapped around our necks. Eventually we used to knock a little hole out in the bottom of the trench, at the back of the trench, and put a few sticks in it, light it to keep our feet warm, and let the smoke drift up all around the back of the trench. Some of us, and because as this did thaw out some of the frost that was lower down, and the back of the trenches used to cave in, so you couldn't rely on the fires too much. When we finished our duty at all our 2 hours, we'd move back about 5 or 10 yards over the crest. Our pup tents were in the snow behind the crest of the hill on the back edge. Sleeping bags, ground sheets were on top of 6 or 8 inches of snow, and your warmth of your body. Everybody was soaking wet. Though strangely enough, there were very few cases of frostbite because the company commander was mustered on that if he hadn't changed his socks when he came back from the patrols. And at least had time to dry your boots out. Mine never got dried out because I only had one pair of boots and I couldn't dare take them off, otherwise I'd have got frostbite. But at least I had 2 or 3 pairs of socks, and they would go down the bottom of the trench in front of the fire to dry out, or fire a few sticks of wood that were there to dry out, so they could take my boots off and put a pair of dry socks on, and then put my wet boots back over the dry socks. But at least it kept the frostbite off. I did get a slight touch of frostbite in the fingers, but we had 2 pairs of gloves. Again, they weren't army. They weren't British Army issue. They were American. One was a silky glove that you put on your hand that had 3 finger holes. One for your little finger, and a single hole for your index finger and your middle finger. And then a pair of gloves went over the top of that, which were the same, just so that you could use your first 2 fingers on the trigger. But you couldn't fire your weapon with the heavy gloves on. You could only fire your weapon when you got your lightweight gloves on, and they didn't keep the cold out. Standing in that trenches when we were there, your fingers got frozen to... Well, we stood there most of the time with our fingers round the triggers, and your fingers got frozen in that position, and really painful when you took your hand away from the trigger guard and exercised your hand to try and get the circulation back in it again. Painful, really painful. Anyway, we stayed there for 3 or 4 weeks, and this was a funny incident. Behind us there was a village, and bearing in mind that we'd only had one bath in all this time up till then, and that was when we had this was way back early on before we got into North Korea, where a bath unit, Ordnance Corps bath unit, had come up and they'd rigged up their pipes, and we had a hot shower, or lukewarm shower, and a complete change of underclothes. They were completely brand new issue. Everybody by this time was lousy, but at this place, Frostbite Ridge, this village was behind the back slope of the hill. And the company commander decided that because there was no activity there, only slight night patrols, that during the day, people could go down to the village and heat up some water and have a strip wash. They couldn't have a bath because there's no facilities. And the Koreans used to have wooden bowls. They didn't have metal bowls. And they were carved out of tree trunks and things like that. So the bowls weren't big. And everybody during that day had a chance to go back in ones and twos to get a strip wash down. And the quartermaster had got some DDT powder. And although we didn't have a change of underclothes, we could lay our underclothes on the floor and douse them in DDT powder. Anyway, most of the people had been down. It was my turn to go down. And we hadn't seen an angry Chinaman, apart from the patrols in the distance, and hear their patrols during the night. We hadn't seen an angry Chinaman for about 10 days. It was my turn to go down. I got down, I'd got stripped off, I'd got my vest and my pants and my trousers, ragged as they were, all covered in DDT. Just started to wash myself, just got the water over, a bowl of water over my shoulders to run down into the bowl. And the alert went, and there was me running across the snow, pulling my trousers up with my jacket hanging round, with equipment over one shoulder, boots unlaced, running as fast as I could to get back up to my slit trench. Got back up my slit trench. Still, this angry, these Chinamen were in the distance. Got dressed. Well, my number two took over the gun. And then the Chinese patrol that were, well, there's a large patrol in actual fact, just veered off, come nowhere near us. So that put pay to my bath. But I got, at least I got wet, and the body lice had gone with the DDT powder. And then we got pulled back from there. This was well after Christmas, and February, March time. We put up with this frostbite ridge, and then we eventually went back to pack to I Corps.
To I Corps?
No, to I think it was 10 Corps to Incheon, which where we got relieved of duties, B Company anyway. We were down to about 6 men per section, and the company was well under strength. They'd done a lot of work, and we got sent back to guard 10 Corps. It was a good break. We was on a peat bog, and we were peat fires, huge peat fires. We were warm. We were getting good rations. We managed to get a change of clothing while we were there. I'd managed to get some new boots. They were Americans. We were with the Americans, and we had a baker with us. We had a lad with us, a name named Bathgate. He was a baker by trade, and our CQMS had managed to procure various agreements, ingredients, and Tatty, we called him Tatty, I don't know why, had made up a batch of donuts, and this was wafting across this peat field, and before long the Americans had found these donuts, and we were getting goodies galore for these donuts in exchange. Got clothing, chocolate, cigarettes, you name it, we got it. We had a man in our platoon called Madden, a northerner. He was the biggest scrounger on this earth, he was. He came back with all sorts of goodies that we shared. But that didn't last long. We were there for 4 days, 5 days, maybe 6 days, I can't remember. When the corps got to come, go back and rejoin the battalion, because we went back quite refreshed and the other companies were still knackered, but at least our morale had gone up. New Year's Day. Oh.
This is going back.
Mm. Going back.
Because you must have been in Incheon in about March, were you?
No. Incheon wasn't Incheon. It couldn't have been. Wasn't Incheon. Yeah, we were in China at Christmas time.
So the guarding of the corps headquarters and the donuts episode was at somewhere else?
No, it was at Incheon, but it was at Christmas before. This was after we came back from Chongju. Yeah, we'd had our break, then we went back up. That's right, we had our break, and then we went back up to Chongju, and then we came back to Pak... No, Chongju was on the border, right up on the Yellow River. We came down, and we got relieved, we went to Khor. Yeah, I've got that wrong.
So you just got it out of sequence?
Out of sequence, yeah. We were at Incheon guarding corps at Christmas time, because on New Year's Day we went back up to Yui Jongbu.
You were going to tell me about what happened on New Year's Day, I think.
Yeah, that was the day we went to Yui Jongbu. This was where we were on the death march, and we came to Frostbite Ridge. Yeah, that's right. We'd gone up and rejoined the battalion, and we'd done what we called the death march. It was a really hard slog over mountains where you couldn't walk up the hillside. You had to use your hands to climb. This is where we had a bad time. We'd gone up during the day, and at night we were taking up a position, and we were going up the hill at night, and we eventually came to... It was an old position that we'd occupied, or someone had occupied previously, and... we'd settled in at night, and we couldn't understand why there were slit trenches there, because we got to the top of the hill and there were slit trenches already there. And so Major Mitchell just reoccupied the slit trenches. And that night there were yelps and screams, and the place was infested with rats. And come daylight, Major Mitchell said, right, let's get out of these positions and renew. And suddenly there was a bang. And Harry Saunders, Corporal Harry Saunders, was wounded. I'm not sure if it's two or three of his section were wounded by a mine. And then Major Mitchell started moving around, and he suddenly yelled, trip wires. And we were in the middle of a minefield, anti-personnel minefield. And he told everybody to stay where they were, not move. I had traded my Bren gun the night before to give me a break, allegedly, and I'd carried a stretcher instead. And that was when I had to go down and get Harry, or help Harry, and he had the other two, yes it was two, not three, were walking wounded. Harry had been hit in the lung, and he was a stretcher case. And the pipey, or our company piper, was with me at the time, John Yule, and we had to carry Harry out from this area. It was quite safe because the mine had gone off. And we carried him out, and Dr. Haldane, our doctor, came up and evacuated him together with the medics. And before we could move any further, Major Mitchell had to call for the engineers, and American engineers came up. And they were told there were tripwires all over the place and to be careful, and they came up to clear the minefield. But one American sergeant started wandering off on his own. He was a coloured sergeant. And suddenly there was a huge bang. And Woggy and I, as Yule, had to go and carry him out. He'd had his head, half his head blown off. And another American had been hit between the legs with a piece of shrapnel, and it had penetrated up through his pelvis. And we were told that that was it. No more movement until the Americans had cleared the minefield. Anyway, they didn't clear the minefield. We had orders to evacuate the hill, and we used the same path down that the Americans had used coming up, and so we had no more casualties.
Who had led this minefield?
Nobody knew. We didn't know who dug the positions, whether they were our old positions used by the United Nations forces, or whether they were Chinese positions. But there were, in addition to being, there were dead bodies there, or the carcasses of dead bodies, that had been eaten by rats. I saw at least three myself during the daylight on the way down from the hill. I didn't see anything in the dark, although you had to say dark. It was light enough by the moon and the stars to see to move around in, but not to distinguish objects at a 10 to 15 yards distance. You could only see them as dark objects. You didn't know what they were. They were just dark objects.
But were these bodies of UN troops or Chinese?